Welcome to the Intentional Father and MLG podcast. We're on the journey of exploring how to grow as godly dads, making intentional and practical steps towards building stronger relationships with our children to help discover who they are in Christ. As ever, I'm joined today by Tim. Welcome, Tim.
Good morning, John. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you? Well, first of all, thank you for letting me do the intro. I mean, this is our last podcast in this series, and I got to do the intro, so I feel very privileged. Thank you.
You did it so well, John. I think you should do it full time. I always make mistakes. When we do this, sometimes we have to re-record the intro because I get it wrong. Okay, can I just say, having done this kind of stuff gives me a newfound respect for professional presenters, because professional presenters do consistently get it right, and I don't know how they do it. And they sound so natural doing it. I always feel a little bit stilted when I do it. But you were born natural. Maybe you're a TV star in the making.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That's really lovely feedback. We are trying to do this in one take, so just spot for the intentional mistakes.
I have to say, John, though, you do have a face for radio.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, especially this morning. Wow. Yeah, I won't go into how I didn't get any sleep. I think that's what a lot of us are like. If you're listening to this, wherever you are, probably in the UK. I was almost going to say wherever you are around the world, but I think we've probably got a mainly UK audience. But wherever you are, you may be tired as well as a dad. But yeah, this is our eighth of eight podcasts. This is a way to round things off. And we're going to talk about church as family today. I mean, I think last week, I'm still quite buzzing from our last session, which was on family on mission. And I'm just really looking forward to getting it. This is a really practical session, isn't it, Tim, about how we're going to talk about the church as family, and you're going to sort of lead us through a few really practical points as to how we can finish off well. But just to sort of frame it as we start, we talked last time a little bit about the changes in families, you know, the way that the biblical family and the versus the nuclear family, and actually nowadays the nuclear family is a big thing, you know, two parents, two kids, a dog, and how it's kind of this Western invention, if you like, from the 1950s. But we just, again, just want to affirm that actually that's not the way the Bible talks about family. The Bible, sort of biblical families, were more about this sort of larger unit, you know, which included more people in it. So household employees, grandparents, aunts and uncles, and so on. So more of this sort of family unit, rather than sort of this nuclear family, and you had this sort of safety net in that, and that's sort of the traditional sort of early biblical model. And of course that's changed, you know. The Industrial Revolution has put the family back into the home, you know, the dad's sort of often pushed out of the home into working, so all of that happens. We won't go into that today, but things have really changed, and it's quite a pressure on nuclear families. There's a lot of you're quite vulnerable, you know, if something goes wrong, if you're sick or you're unwell. Basically, nuclear families are not necessarily always working. But more importantly than that, the Bible reframes the concept of family. Tim, do you want to say just a word about how, particularly in the New Testament, we see the Bible talk about family in a slightly different way?
Yeah, so the word that's often used for family in the New Testament is the Greek word oikos, isn't it, John? Which is the word household. So the idea that, you know, and again, you know, if you study kind of Greek or Roman culture or Jewish culture at the time, they would have thought about things in terms of households. They would have had servants, they would have had you know, people that were attached to their home. For those of us that were slightly sad and ended up doing, this is a total segue. Did you do Latin at school, John?
I did for 3 years.
Did you ever remember a man called Caecilius?
No.
Caecilius in Horto. Yes, this is a random segue that we didn't plan for. But most people that did Latin will remember Caecilius. And it was all about this kind of, he was a character, there was a story all around, and it was this kind of, that's how you studied the story of this man called Caecilius and his household, and it was him and his dog and his servant and his chef and his daughter, his wife and his kids, and then there was the, and obviously as the you know, you developed your language through studying Caecilius. But yeah, the idea was it wasn't just simply 2.4 children, but it was a much broader picture, and I think that God's designed it that way. I don't think it's as healthy to have just, you know, particularly in the UK, we have small houses where we don't have kind of much space for entertaining if we're like most houses don't, and so we don't have this kind of open door policy. Again, if you live out, again, John and I have both spent quite a lot of time abroad, haven't we? And in hot countries, the houses are much more open, and so you just sort of wander in and out in a much greater way than you do in a kind of English house, where it's not, you know, an Englishman's home is his castle. And so I think it's about rediscovering that kind of approach to family, which is much more of an open approach. There's still a core to it, but it's got, rather than, I suppose the way I look at my family is that I have a core, a very strong core, but I have a broad boundary. So my family includes a lot more people than that core, but it's not a kind of a tight, like sort of closed box that only those people can get into, and very occasionally we let someone else into. It's an open, movable thing, but the core is solid. That's how I think about it. But
That's great. The New Testament reframes the language as well. You know, actually, we talked about as the family of God, we're called to be brothers and sisters. You know, there's a sense of which we're called to be spiritual mothers and fathers in the church. So there is a sense of which the church, the gathered church, is that picture of family, and that's, which is wonderful news. If you come in and you haven't got, you know, an earthly father, actually there's a sense of which that there are those in the church. It's a unique multi-generational, multi-ethnic group of people, which comes with lots of challenges, but also what an incredible place to be part of a family and grow together. So we just want to sort of think about what does it look like for us as intentional fathers to be fathers in the context of church as family. And we've got five, I mean, I think it's 4 points, but Tim, we're going to go for five, which we're going to walk through with real practical relevance. And in the workbook, you can look at some of the questions that will sort of be good to dwell on as we meet together in small groups, which cross these points that we're about to make. So Tim, do you want to start us off? We're going to start off really with multi-generational relationships. Tell us a bit about that.
I suppose the thing about, you know, a normal kind of 2.4 children family is that really you have children, you have adults, and the kids are all basically the same age and the adults are pretty much the same age. Maybe you've got grandparents who are a slightly different generation, but of course in the church what you have is a wide variety of people from all the different ages, and I think for me one of the most shaping seasons in my life was when I was a kind of a preteen and early teen, kind of 11 through to 15, maybe, where really I didn't have any friends in the church we were in. My dad had gone to lead a small little church just up the road, and it was predominantly old people. And I remember going to home group on a Wednesday, and it was in our home, and everybody was old, everybody. And they used to buy me ice cream when the ice cream van came around. I always remember that was a finger and hope, pray for the ice cream van to come around on a Wednesday night. And a lady called Betty but everyone was called Betty. There's about four Bettys. But you know, it shaped me in that I think it gave me an appreciation for old people, older people. And their perspectives. And it gave me a love for them. It taught me how to talk to them. It taught me how to understand them. And actually that was so shaping, because my first proper leadership job involved leading three people that were much older than me, much older than me. And so it kind of, I'd already got experience of dealing with older people, and it just broadens you. And so I think, you know, what we can think about as dads when we're thinking about it is, how do I intentionally create opportunities for my family to have meaningful relationships with people from lots of different stages of life? You know, and, you know, whether they're 70, 80, 40, 50, how do I engage that? And the church provides such a wonderful opportunity, and realizing that you can be a significant blessing to someone in their 70s or 50s even, you know, by being kind of connected, involved, your children being involved in their life. Have you got some practical experience, John, of when you did that as a young person, or your parents did that?
Yeah, no, definitely. What came to me was my wife, who was Heidi, who was really shaped by their parents inviting an older lady in from the church, and she became their auntie. She still is auntie to them, and that hugely shaped her, and that's actually shaped the way she's approaching our kids. So she would say, look, for our daughter, she would see it as a high priority to introduce her to and encourage like intentionally encourage her to have a relationship with older folk in the church. And that's just starting now, actually, which is really great, because she was so shaped by it herself. She wants to introduce that for her. But yeah, definitely the same for me. People of all different ages. And I think it's not just people at the oldest extent, if you like. Actually, it's people at different levels. And one question that there is in the workbook, we're asking about people in different sort of stages of life. And it's really great to look around and see other people who have kind of gone through life and they've really got their 50s right, if you like. You know, you've seen people who have really flourished, the men who have flourished, and women as well, for our girls. And you think, actually, wouldn't it be great just to learn a bit about how they did that? What are some of the principles? Getting to tell the story. And it doesn't have to be, could be really weird. You know, you sort of say, son, I want you to go and sit down with so-and-so and just ask them loads of questions. Or, you know, to my daughter, go and sit down with so-and-so. But we have done that occasionally. We've encouraged somebody to invite them out for coffee, or to, you know, if they're around at our house, we'll just ask some questions. And we just want our kids to, you know, just to learn from other people who have done life well, who have got life experience that we haven't got, to say, what does it look like to be a godly person throughout life? And that, for me, as I get older now, so in my 40s, actually, I want to be introducing my kids to sort of people in their 20s. It's quite important. So I want to see people in their 20s who are going for God. And I want my kids to meet them and to get to know them and ask some questions. And they're seeing somebody who's just a little bit further ahead of them. I want them to see what a godly person looks like in that stage of life as well.
Yeah, I think the other way that multi-generation works is even going right the way down. So recently, though, we've just had half term, and our family spent a range of lots of different time with different families, many of whom had quite young children. So children that were sort of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, 7 or 8. And so for my boys, who are older now, 15, in their teenage years, actually, again, it's a really intentional way. So we had a lot of talk with our kids before we went around how they were to behave with younger children. And what we're teaching them very intentionally is the value of, you know, not thinking about yourself. Like, you want to sit on your phone. Why would you want to play with a 6-year-old when you're 15? You don't. But actually, you can serve, like, for that 6-year-old to be able to play. I mean, we went somewhere, and then they weren't in the church. We went to visit some old friends of ours, and we were trying to leave, and the two little boys, who must have been, I think they were sort of 6 and 8 or something, were literally clinging to my older two boys and wouldn't let them go. Like, you can't leave, you're not allowed to leave, like, you've got to stay here. And it's just, and it's realizing that, like, you know, that whole, that, you know, how do you care? How do you talk to different people? How do you have that attitude? It's an intentional. So it wasn't, oh, we just went to visit some people, they had some kids, they're annoying, get over it. It's like, no, this is an intentional opportunity to hang out with kids that are significantly younger than you, where you're taking responsibility, you're leading the activity. So I think when we think about multi-generational, we are thinking about everything, as you say, not just, you know, find some old people, but find some kids. Yeah. You know, if you've got older teenage kids, find a family with young kids and say, actually, how can you bless and, you know, help them if they're younger? And so I think, and that's where the church is unparalleled and unrivaled in its ability to create those opportunities. There is no other organization that I can think of that does that as well as the church does, and provide such a range of diverse experiences and backgrounds, and, you know, and yet there's a deep love for one another. I think it's a very precious thing. We mustn't miss it.
Yeah, and so many of the things we've talked about in other podcasts, you know, the roles and the values and things like that. Like, as you say, like, what a unique place to do that. You're playing that out with a group of people who are all these different ages and stages, and you're modelling your values all the time. You're modelling your values. To others, and we were saying just before we came on air that, you know, sometimes your teens will want to come and join you when you're with your friends, so watch it, and watching you as well, they'll be interested, they'll want to listen to what you're talking about, and you know, we encourage you, don't just shut them out, but actually welcome them in. It won't be appropriate that they're always there in every conversation you're having, but welcome them in. They'll learn about how you're sort of talking, what you're talking about. They want to know how you sort of operate with your friends as well, on a sort of peer level. Mm. It's a great opportunity to do that in the church setting. Mm. So yeah, multi-generational relationships. I think there's so many more things we could say, and I'm sure that people have got lots of other examples that you've got from childhood and from the current day as well to share. when people get into groups and so on. So yeah, church as family, church as multi-generational family. So that's number one. Second is modeled manhood. Tell us a bit about that, Tim.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this was something I think that we talk a lot about, is that what is a man? What does a man look like? Or what does a woman look like? We've talked about that a little bit. And as we pointed out, I think it was in podcast four, I think you used an example of a friend of yours who was really into rugby, and his child wasn't into rugby. And you know, we know it's a, you know, quite a bit, maybe almost a cliche or an overused thing, but you know, there are often some sons or daughters that look at their parents and think, I'm just nothing like you. You're well into sports and outdoor pursuits, and I want to sit and, you know, read a book, or I want to, you know, I'm a geek, I like Star Trek, or, you know, I'm not kind of, or equally, I love sports, and my dad basically likes to just drink coffee or whatever. And I think the great thing about the church is that you've got lots of godly examples of what it means to be a man, where someone's very different to me. I mean, you know, I think about some of the men in our group, they're very different, you know, in our church, in our small group, you know, our men are very different. And I think that's wonderful, because you can, I think, both as a father, you can very intentionally point and direct your sons and daughters to godly examples of other men and women, where you're like, look, you don't have to be just like me. You know, I might be a dynamic, extroverted leader, and my son may not be like that, but actually look at this guy, he's not like that either, but look how godly he is, look how, you know, he's kind, he cares for his family, he's responsible, people respect him. And I think I think particularly the pressure that the world puts on, you know, gender roles, or, you know, or not gender roles, but, you know, gender identity, I think it's a very powerful thing in the church to show that diversity, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. And there's a guy who joined us on one of our other podcast series on diversity in the church called Andrew Bunt, who talked to us, and we looked at the theme of sexuality. And he's got an incredible testimony of how it was actually being with other men in the church that just modeled to him that there are other men who are like him, which was a huge relief to him, because in his family, you know, dynamic, that he just didn't feel that he was, you know, making the mark, if you like. And so, yeah, if you're being a man, sort of modeling manhood, but also for our girls as well, like absolutely just the same. Really, there are women who are just very different to our wives and different to women in our families. And we were also saying that, you know, it's fine to, great to have great, if you've got grandparents around and uncles and aunts, that's great. But often times they are a lot like us. There is overlap with our personalities. You know, we've got them from somewhere, haven't we? But church does give us, as you say, it is an unparalleled, unique way of introducing our children, our teenagers, to what it looks like to be a man. And humbling for us as well, to realise that some of the things that we're so convinced of, that this is what it means, we can be challenged by one another and encouraged and shaped by one another to live out what it looks like to be a man and to be a father. So you're modeled manhood, modeling it in the church. That links back to that first point of that's why we want, you know, we want our young people to be in church, to be involved, to serve alongside, which we'll come to in a moment, because part of that is you're exposing them and introducing them to people who are modeling what it looks like to be men and women. I think should we mention asset map here, Tim?
Yes.
Let's mention the asset map as point number three. I think it relates across the lot, but a really practical point. Tell us what an asset map is, because this is a really practical way of sort of putting all this together.
Yeah. So if you want to know about cricket and you want to go and watch a cricket match, then I'm your man, right? Because I know all about it. I'm well into cricket. I love it. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. If you want to talk about fishing, not a Scooby-Doo. Right, haven't got a clue about fishing, right, or outdoor activities. The idea of trekking off into the mountains doing something is not something that I would know. I do know a little bit, but not really. And I think, you know, when we're thinking about intention and experiences for our kids, the great thing about the church is that there's so many people that know so much more stuff than we do about stuff that we've never done, you know, like, you know, our friend Constantine, you know, he loves to, you know, climb mountains, he's done ice climbing and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, and I think, like, actually, as my boys get older, how can I use that network of relationships to help me create experiences and opportunities for my children. And I think sometimes, you know, we why don't we have the confidence to go to one of the guys in the church and say, look, you're really good at, you know, you're really into, I don't know, you know, you go and watch a lot of bands. I'd love to take my kids to a gig. You know, can you help me find a gig that you think they might enjoy and come with me? Because I don't like all that stuff. I don't know, you know, like, can you just help with that? Because sometimes often we don't do it because we don't feel the confidence. Oh, I don't even know what to do. Yeah. I wouldn't organize. It's not my cup of tea. But going with someone that's confident makes such a difference. And I, even things like, what, I mean, actually my eldest is just about to go through work experience. And it was an interesting moment to kind of start thinking about who could I potentially connect him with that he could do work experience with. And I think that would be just on a really practical level. It'd be great in our groups to share whether we could offer work experience for our kids. You know, like, yeah, I'll take him for a couple of days to give him some work experience. He can come and be with me. I mean, what an intentional, you know, all those things we just talked about, really practically, you know, if you're a doctor, come and, you know, obviously it's a bit different being a doctor. Obviously, I guess maybe it's a bit of a challenge, but, you know, if you're an engineer or if you're a lawyer or if you're a gardener, you know, come and do a day with me, you know, and see what it's like. So, yeah, I think that network, that asset of skills, jobs, yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, my daughter's doing her Duke of Edinburgh. And, you know, when you look at the skills thing, someone should think about doing photography, you know, who does photography, who could sort of help shape that for her and sign her off. So, yeah, lots of different possibilities. Unique sort of asset map of the church. And that's really good. So, okay, so we've talked a bit about multi-generational relationships, modeled manhood, an asset map, and then fathers in brotherhood. And just that term, brotherhood, just, yeah, band of brothers all the way, which is a great thing, I think, to watch as my teens get older. That's something I cannot wait. But what do we mean by fathers in brotherhood, point number four?
Well, I suppose we talk, don't we, about our kids needing, you know, family and what, you know, etc. But we need family. You know, we need people that we feel we can stand alongside. I think, you know, having, you know, done this with some of the guys in the church, I think, you know, as much as I'm sure they love listening to these podcasts, I think possibly the most valuable thing for most people, if we're really honest, has been that sitting in a room with other people talking about your kids, talking about, but really talking about your struggles. How do I handle this? What wisdom have you, of my brothers, got to offer me? You know, you might have kids that are a bit older than me and I just need that. Like, again, where else in the world is this kind of really available? It just isn't. The best you're going to get is if you're fortunate enough to have a good set of mates from the pub or from maybe from work, you've got some guys and you might ad hocly talk about things. But, you know, use, you know, essentially that connection, that relationship you have with other guys. You know, go out for coffee with one of the other two guys in the church. Make an intentional effort to go out for coffee or for a beer or do something and just talk about stuff. Like, you need support. And church, you know, as a father, it's hard work, isn't it? You know, John and I, we've been friends for a long time. We often talk about our marriages, our kids, because we know that that's actually some of the most important stuff for us. And we need advice, we need guidance, we need sometimes someone to listen to our frustrations. So I think that sense of brotherhood is so important, really.
Yeah, it's great. Not much to add, really. I think I just wholeheartedly agree with that. And then let's finish with point number five, children and fathers serving side by side. How do we do that? What and why should we be thinking of that, Tim?
So I think when we talk about all this stuff, right, we talk about, you know, multi-generational relationships, we talk about fathers and brotherhood, network of relationships, all that kind of stuff. Now, there's two ways of doing that, right? Now, one of which is to be intentional. That's a great phrase, isn't it? And, you know, and it's a bit weird. You invite someone around your house and you try and, like, do it in a kind of really intentional way. And that's really important, right? But actually, so much of this stuff happens naturally in the context of serving side by side with someone. So, you know, the best, we went away, we just did a work weekend down at Rora House and we did some practical stuff with the guys. And the conversations that blokes are having, just stood side by side doing some, you know, smashing something up or painting something or, you know, building something, is just really powerful. Like, you often have those best conversations in that space and you learn about, oh, that'd be really useful, like, to know that. That guy could really help me out in this place. And so really, church provides, I think, just practically getting involved, serving in church provides the best opportunity to do this. Yep. However, if you can do that with your kids, so if you can invite your children into doing that, then that I think is even better. Not only are you creating a natural opportunity for your friend, you know, you've got this guy you respect, you're serving alongside him, so you're modeling that to your kids, but you're also naturally bringing your kids into that relationship without having to kind of go, let's sit down and have a coffee with, you know, 70-year-old Dave and ask him questions. And like the 13-year-old's thinking, man, this is weird. Actually, if we're just stacking chairs together and Dave takes the mickey out of him and like take, you know, and you know, that's how you build that relationship. And I think, you know, I mean, I've seen you do it at church, you know, you help set up, you know, once a month or whatever it is, and you know, your two of your little lads come along, don't they, and do it with you, and they do it alongside some of the other guys in the church. And I saw one of the guys in the church who was doing tech this week, and he got his daughter involved, so his daughter was helping him sort of lay the cables and helping him do the words, and you're like, brilliant, like what a great opportunity to build connection with your own kids. And your mod, again, comes back to modeling values. It comes back to creating natural relationships. And I just want to encourage you, if you're not yet serving in church with your children, find something you can do with your kids together. It can be practical. Obviously, it's easy, but it could even be, let's do a, you know, let's run a group together, and, you know, you can come and help me plan it or organize it, you know. So I don't know if you've got examples of that, John.
Yeah, well, I just think it's so powerful. I mean, for it, all those things, it models values. It's the time traveling to and from as well, talking about it, talking about why we're doing it. You know, we have to get up early, and you know, it's unparalleled for me when I've involved my kids and things like that. It ticks so many boxes, and it's also great fun. I mean, I'd much rather do that if I'm going out to do things, you know, to take my kids with me. And to, you know, maybe teach them along the way. Oftentimes I'm not going to sort of teach them or bring home a point about how we perfectly stack chairs or serve coffee or all the theory behind it, you know, but we just do it, serve together. It is an unparalleled way, I think, of blessing others as well as, you know, building relationship with your kids. If you're thinking, what does it look like to be a family on mission? Well, actually, oftentimes it's very ordinary stuff. It's ordinary things. It's serving together and serving other people, and church is a great place for that. So
I think don't underestimate the power of the practical. I think that's the thing, is that if you know we sometimes try and make it too complicated, and sometimes just being practical and finding something to do, and you know, even it can be, I mean, I remember, like, it's like when I was young, my dad, we had to manage a church, and I remember being down the drains with my dad, you know, down the pooey drains with my dad, and watching him, and then being involved in that and being part of that, you know, cutting someone's grass in the church, you know, let's go together as an old lady in the church, you know, does she need some help, we'll go and do it together. And they're going to moan at you. I just want to tell you for now, your kids will probably moan because they won't want to do it, but I tell you what, they will love it and respect it. The number of skills that they'll get from doing it, you know, again, they learn how to use a lawnmower, you know, they learn how to think about doing a nice job, or, you know, and I think sometimes a lot of this stuff can be, you know, we try and make it so complicated. It's just like, find something simple that you can do. Visit, and
you can say to your kid, I just agree with that. You can say to your kids, we are going to be doing something together. And maybe we can talk about what that is, whether it's serving coffee or doing PA or whatever, but this is what we're going to do. And yeah, they won't love it. Don't think that mine and Tim's kids are just like, yes, that's great, great idea, Dad. Can't wait to get up early to do that. They won't. But you can just consistently say, this is what we're doing, and let's go and do it together. And yeah, my experience is that actually it's not, once it's done, you don't get loads of moaning. Actually, it can be quite fun.
No, I mean, one of the greatest joys of my life, honestly, is I get to do, I lead worship, and my two older boys play in their worship band. And there's a couple of moments, not a couple, regularly, I just look around and think, my word, I am so blessed and so privileged to be able to doing something that I love with my boys, serving other people. Like, it is just, like, those are golden moments, and I just want to commend them to you, really. And I think the church provides, again, there's nowhere else you can do that, not really, not in quite the same way. I suppose there are some ways, but it's just, there's so much opportunity in the church to do that kind of stuff. And our rotors will be full at the end of this podcast, John.
They will, yes. But it's not the primary intention, but it may happen. Well, I think we better wrap up. Church is family, so multi-generational relationships, modelled manhood, asset maps, fathers in brotherhood and children and fathers serving side by side. That's great. And that, hopefully that sits alongside the other episodes. And as a whole, we want them to sort of shape how we're sort of approaching things as intentional fathers. So Tim, just before I close this out, anything you wanted to say just to conclude? Because we're at the end of our mini series.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think, I mean, having kind of gone through this journey as we've done it together, really, I think that, you know, the first thing I just would love to encourage the guys to do is just to keep being intentional, you know. But even if you're intentional in one or two things, you know, you can think, oh, man, there's so many things I ought to be doing. And you could have gone through this and think, oh, I'm not doing it. But my encouragement to you, even like what we've just talked about, you know, intentionally going, I'm going to do something with my kids on a Sunday morning practically. Like, that's an intentional step. And every small intentional step that you make is a step towards helping demonstrate to them godliness and you know, Christian manhood and womanhood. And I just think, don't underestimate the power of lots of small intentional steps that may not seem very grand, but believe me, when your kid's 25 or 30, they'll look back and you'll go, Dad, you did so much for me. And you think, oh, that was not much, because parenting isn't much. It's a series of small, insignificant moments that add up over the course of time to build something that's really quite significant.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Tim. Well, that's a great way to finish. We hope you've enjoyed the 8 sessions. Perhaps you're listening in and you haven't sort of run a group. The way we're doing it is putting a podcast out, having a Zoom call together the week after that just to unpack some more things, and then meeting in small groups, which, as you said earlier, Tim, is really the gold here, really, where we're actually applying it and discussing it in the small groups. There is a workbook, which we'll put the link in the description, so you can use the workbook as a guide for discussion if that works for you. But yeah, we hope that that's been a helpful thing. Get in touch with us if you've got any other questions, if you'd like to run the group again or run it elsewhere. We'd be really happy to chat with you. So yeah, we've been talking about intentional fatherhood. Really hope that's been a blessing to you. Check out the other podcasts on the MRG Podcast Network and the MRG website for other things that we're doing. Give us a like or subscribe just to help share some of the things that we're doing. We hope to see you soon, both either in person or online. God bless you all. Bye for now.